This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the program. We like to ease your burden after a long day of work. It's Thursday, it's 5 o'clock. You have the wisdom to have tuned in to 90.3 FM KDVS. Good for you. Because for the next hour, we're going to do what we can to improve your mind. And one way we like to do that is by relaxing you and making you laugh a bit. So to do so, we've decided to check for you whether you might be a redneck by virtue of a simple test, which we have shamelessly lifted off the Car Talk website because we're big fans of Ray and Tom Maliazzi and thought that this was too good not to share with you, the KDVS audience. All right. You may have wondered whether you might be a redneck, and here's how you might be able to tell, okay? You might be a redneck if you've ever been involved in a custody fight over a hunting dog. That's one possibility. You might be a redneck if you've ever stolen toilet paper, okay? You might be a redneck if you've ever cut your grass and found a car. You might be a redneck if you've ever spray painted your girlfriend's name on an overpass. Boy, we gotta thank Jeff Foxworthy for some of these. You may be a redneck if your boat has not left the driveway in the last 15 years. Okay. You may be a redneck if included on your list of top 5 hygiene concerns are chiggers. You may be a redneck if you own a homemade fur coat. And last one here, you may be a redneck if your wife has ever said to you, come move this transmission so I can take a bath. All right, for more on those, check the Car Talk section at cars.com for more laughs on that. We've decided to do the same and take another example here of, this comes from some analogies from high school essays, some rather bad analogies from high school essays. We've selected 4 that we like here. Okay, number 1. John and Mary had never met. They were like 2 hummingbirds who had also never met. All right. Her eyes were like 2 brown circles with big black dots in the center. All right. He spoke with the wisdom that can only come from experience. Like a guy who went blind because he looked at a solar eclipse without one of those boxes with a pinhole in it, and now goes around the country speaking in high schools about the dangers of looking at a solar eclipse without one of those boxes with a pinhole in it. And my personal favorite, he was as tall as a 6-foot-3-inch tree. All right, someone sent me this one a few months back. Subject of diets and dying, and analysis of all those conflicting medical studies that we're familiar with, okay? And these are true. The Japanese eat very little fat and suffer fewer heart attacks than the British or Americans. The French eat a lot of fat and also suffer fewer heart attacks than the British or the Americans. The Japanese drink very little wine and suffer fewer heart attacks. The Italians drink an excessive amount of red wine and also suffer fewer heart attacks. The conclusion from all of this has to be that you can eat or drink what you like. It's speaking English that's going to give you a heart attack. Another bit off the web. Is a computer male or female? Allegedly, a language instructor was explaining to her class that in the French language, all nouns are either masculine or feminine. Puzzled, one of her students asked, "What sex is a computer?" Uncertain, the instructor divided the class into 2 groups of males and females and asked them to decide what sex a computer should be and to give 4 reasons for that decision. The results? The men's group decided that the computer is, of course, female because 1, no one but their creator understands their internal logic. 2, the native language they use to communicate with others of their kind is incomprehensible to everyone else. 3, even your smallest mistakes are stored in their long-term memory for later retrieval. And 4, as soon as you commit to one, you find yourself spending half your paycheck on its accessories. The women's group, on the other hand, decided that the computer should be referred to in the masculine gender because, one, in order to get their attention, you have to turn them on. Two, they have a lot of data, but are still clueless. Three, they're supposed to help you solve your problems, but half the time they are the problem. And four, as soon as you commit to one, you realize that if you'd waited a bit longer, you could have gotten a better model. All right, let's do some technology and science. I would like to put a plug in also for the program This Week in Science, which I listen to on Tuesday. It's on every Tuesday morning here at KDVS, 8:30 to 9:30. And they do some pretty good stuff. The kind of story that they might do that we like to do as well sometimes that caught my eye was the fact that scientists or astronomers noticed that there was what appeared to be an asteroid-like object out there in space called J002E3 that some bright people worked the trajectory out on, the orbit in space, and determined that it probably was the booster from the Saturn V rocket that put the Apollo 12 astronauts into orbit. It apparently left the Earth in November of 1969 and has been out in a long orbit and is now intersecting us again. What I thought was interesting is the fact that there's a 20% chance that it's going to crash into the moon next year. Now, as you may recall, that when we sent the Apollo astronauts out there, they put seismographs on the moon. So this could be a very very interesting thing scientifically, if the booster does crash into the moon, to detect the moon quakes that result to gain scientific information. But I was rather distressed to find out that in 1977, apparently the NASA, in a cost-cutting move, shut off the seismographs that were on the moon, which, since it's rather difficult to put a seismograph on the moon, you'd think they do everything possible to keep it working. But no, they shut them all off. They're going to try and get them reactivated, and perhaps they'll have some luck so they can be working when this booster hits the moon. And we're just going to follow that story with you. Now, on the political scene, there is much talk of war. War in the Middle East. War against Iraq and Saddam Hussein. All of a sudden, this guy who's been left in power by George Bush Sr. back in 1991, all of a sudden it seems that Saddam appears to be a big problem. The rest of the world doesn't see it this way, but the U.S. can only talk about going to war. We would like to welcome back to Radio Parallax at this point Mr. Yuri Fleischman, a spokesman for White House spokesman.
Thank you.
Are you happy, sir, that Iraq has now agreed to unconditionally let in inspectors?
Happy would be an inoperative word. We're not going to fall for their ploy, Douglas. Everyone knows they want us to think they're letting inspectors back in. This act by Saddam is an attempt to buy time, to maneuver us between Iraq and a hard place, if you will.
Can you explain what President Bush meant when he said that Saddam had crawfished out of international agreements?
A crawfish is a small freshwater lobster. It moves forward, then abruptly backwards if threatened. The metaphor is plainly obvious.
Well, maybe not. And
well, I think it is.
What does the White House mean when they say Saddam is doing the rope-a-dope?
Well, the rope-a-dope is a well-known boxing stratagem involving the absorption of blows done while leaning against the ropes, skillfully employed by the wily Muhammad Ali against George Foreman.
Yeah, I remember.
And I want to stress that President Bush will not punch himself out, as Mr. Ali so colorfully said about Mr. Foreman at their match.
Well, frankly, I never thought he would.
Good, because George Bush is no George Foreman.
How do you account for the fact that other nations are not joining the U.S. in suddenly acting belligerently against Iraq?
Well, no one is saying we want war. The president is in the peace business, which I think you understand sometimes means going to war.
To keep the peace.
Precisely. And war with Iraq may be needed now for the benefit of peace.
And also perhaps to keep the nation's mind off scandals like Enron and more Florida election debacles.
A war would boost Republican candidates, but we're not going to send our boys over to do a job that Asian boys ought to be doing.
Well, I think I've heard that one once before. Sir, what about media reports of this GOP video that was circulated, was explaining that war was going to be marketed in September? Is the GOP marketing war right now?
Well, I have no time to read. I mean, Fox News is good enough for me. By the way, did you know that we have uncovered key evidence of Iraqi involvement with al-Qaeda. You should know this. Very interesting.
Well, I didn't know that. Could we see some of that evidence?
In due time, but I assure you, the government of Iraq has been implicated in numerous attacks on U.S. interests.
Such as?
Well, the sinking of the Lusitania is suspicious.
You're tying that to Iraq?
And we have linked the notorious harbor explosion that destroyed a U.S. warship.
You're referring, of course, to the Cole.
No, the Maine.
The battleship Maine sunk in Havana Harbor?
Yes. Havana is in Cuba. Fidel Castro is dictator of Cuba. Saddam Hussein is dictator of Iraq. Coincidence?
Well, if inspectors go in and they're not bothered, and they find no weapons of mass destruction, will the administration then be satisfied?
We won't be satisfied until all who so much as dream of using weapons of mass destruction are removed from power.
Well, isn't that really broad?
Broad? Well, let me illustrate by means of a story. There once was a boy who kept telling his mother he would clean his room, but he never did. Again and again and again, he'd be warned of dire consequences, and the boy kept promising, even pretended to clean his room, but he never actually did. Not until this boy was beaten with a thick strap numerous times did that room finally get cleaned.
And beating Saddam with a stick will clean up Iraq?
Only by bombing and beating Iraq, if you will, and ousting Saddam will the room known as Iraq get clean. This is our position.
Shouldn't the U.S. be concentrating on Osama bin Laden, the man who actually led the al-Qaeda attacks on 9/11?
Well, we can't find Osama. He's harder to find than Waldo. So, until we do, I think we should advise the U.S. electorate that Mr. Hussein is the world's oldest boy who cried wolf.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, we just can't believe him anymore. And that Tariq Aziz fellow, he's just Pinocchio to Saddam's Geppetto, if you will.
Mr. Fleischman, I'm quite lost.
Well, we don't take Aziz seriously. Would you deal with a puppet?
Well, you deal with puppet regimes.
No comment. Look, this new war is going to be about naked aggression.
Well, that's what George Bush Sr. said back in 91.
Well, it's time to say it again. The upshot is the current Bush administration is committed to unilateralism, if necessary, and Americanism at all times.
Well, what is Americanism?
A great Republican president, Warren G. Harding, once said, "I don't know much about Americanism, but it's a great word with which to carry an election."
That was Warren G. Harding.
Yeah, they used to call him G.
Speaking of elections, would you care to discuss Jeb Bush's Florida and the inability they seem to have down there to tally up Democratic votes?
In a word, no. But let me reiterate, we all want peace. And keep in mind, war does create jobs, which we need right now, and it stimulates the economy, which we also need.
Well, they say it's good business.
Well, it can be, yes.
Why not invest your son?
Well, it's not a bad idea, considering the price of college education these days.
And, of course, war certainly gets the nation in a patriotic mood.
Well, why don't you get in the spirit?
Well, I just wish I could at this point. Any final words on the silence of the rest of the world on this need, this sudden need for a war with Iraq?
Well, we feel that the rest of the world's response is silent, but deadly.
I see. Well, good luck searching for bin Laden. I'm sure you'll find him just before the 2004 elections.
Well, it could happen.
Yeah, maybe around near November, perhaps.
No comment.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm wagering that it will. And I'd like to thank you for coming, Mr. Yuri Fleischman.
No comment.
All kidding aside on this topic, I think that that as intelligent people who consider ourselves reasonably well-informed about what's going on in the world, we have to have some skepticism about a need that's being pushed by the Bush administration to go to war in Iraq. This nation was attacked last year by al-Qaeda, by a group of Muslim fundamentalist extremists spearheaded by Osama bin Laden, a Saudi. Most of the attackers were from Saudi. And we have gone to war in Afghanistan to eliminate their base of operations rather successfully, although it appears that Osama, of course, escaped our dragnet. We cannot find him. We cannot find some of the leadership. And apparently, out of frustration, we are now diverting America's attention toward Iraq. Saddam's Iraq has been in the same state it's been since George Bush Sr. had the whole U.S. armed forces in Basra, in tanks, in airplanes, perfectly capable of going up the highway from Basra to Baghdad to depose Saddam. He was left in power and has, by and large, minded his P's and Q's since. He's not adopted any sort of aggressive stance. He's not behind the attacks on the U.S. One has to wonder, is there any other explanation for going to war with Iraq except to divert the American public's attention and to over the fact that we can't find Osama, to create a diversion, as it were. I would like to be able to conclude otherwise, but I find myself unable to do so. Certainly, a war, especially a brief war, a popular war, unifies a nation. But I think if you ask President Galtieri of Argentina how well it worked out to invade the Falkland Islands, you realize that war is a tricky business. It doesn't always turn out as happily as you would like it to. And I just think that, you know, unless we have some better evidence that there's a good reason to go into Iraq, I have to share the viewpoint of the rest of the world's leaders who are not centered in the Bush White House and say this does not seem to make a great deal of sense. Like everybody else, we'll be following the developments that happen in the month of October and November, particularly in an election year, to see what maneuvers go on. But I really think that we should have a great deal of skepticism for this sudden need for war. All right, looks like we're about out of time for our first segment here. So stick around for segments 2 and 3. We'll be talking to our friends Sean Minton in segment number 2 and Stuart Gardner in segment number 3. I think it'll be interesting for you. I hope so. And you are listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. This is Radio Parallax.
Check my